tell me about where you were born, but we're going to erase this. I just want to see if it works.
I was born in Romania, in a very small town. That was more country than town.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go to school 6 miles.
Oh, my goodness.
And in the summer, they wouldn't let us take lunch. They gave us 2 hours for lunch so we could walk home and back. It was a very anti-Semitic country I came from. And this was a public school I went to. Prior to that, I'm mixing it up, but prior to that, I started going to school at 1.5 years. You know, you have to get educated.
At a year and a half, you started?
Yeah, because they had a tutor in the house, 7 children. They had to be educated, and they wouldn't accept them in the public school. And I was 9 before they accepted me. So they used to call it a city school. But actually, it was a Jewish school. Jewish people got together, and what you learned was French and German and reading and writing and arithmetic. No geography for some reason. It was not an organized school.
So you'll tell me about your immediate family that you had. How many of your father, your mother, father's work?
Before
you came to America, in Romania.
My father was a wheat handler.
Wheat?
Wheat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he bought wheat, all kinds of things that grow,
mm-hmm.
and would ship them in carloads to Germany, Austria. Sometimes it would be potatoes, sometimes hay. You know, this was his occupation.
He was like a grain
grain
merchant.
That's right.
Okay. And your mother?
My mother was the most wonderful person in the world. She was very brilliant. Many times my children think I imagine that I couldn't even be smart enough to imagine the things that she said to us and how she had a good answer for everything. For instance, when I went to school, to public school, they never gave me credit for knowing anything. They were trying to make some Christian child to be the head of the class. They worked so hard on me that it was pathetic. I felt sorry for them, but it discouraged me from wanting to go to school, because no matter how much I knew, they would give me a low mark in conduct, and if I got a low mark in conduct, I just couldn't go forward, you know.
Were there other Jewish children in the
school? Very few, no, in the school, because if they had an empty chair, they allowed a Jewish child to come in. Then they would go through the, there were 4 grades.
Now, this isn't the school you mentioned before that was organized by Jewish people.
No,
no. This is the public
school. The public school. Because that is the thing that I remember most, and that is the one that I benefited most from, because it was organized education.
Mm-hmm. The Jewish school you're talking about, yeah.
Right.
You mean
no,
the
I mean the public
okay.
school.
All right.
I had to learn Jewish, Hebrew, and I don't know why I was not, I didn't feel at home or interested, or, but in the public schools, I did very well. So you come home, sometimes you cry. Look, out of the whole class of 60 children, I was the only one that knew the answer. And at the end of when you get your report card, I don't get credit for it. And my mother says, but you don't go to school for marks. You go to learn, and you know, you get that hammered in so much that you don't go to school for marks, you go to school to learn. That my whole life was geared to that, It doesn't matter whether I please everybody or anybody. I have to be right. I have to be right myself. And you don't. There's in many ways that she always had a come home from any place to tell us how some young person got along so well and did so well at a ball, at balls or weddings or whatever, and always praising something good.
That's a wonderful characteristic. What about your brothers and sisters? Did you have any?
I had four sisters and a brother. Two brothers, oh my. They're both dead. But my sisters, my oldest sister, is going to be 84 years old this month. And then my brother was older than I, and then I came. Then there's. You don't want the details.
Well, I just was curious. And what became of them? And, they all came over to America here?
Yeah, eventually. They didn't come at the same time. My father had to first pay off the ticket that we came. My older sister and I came first.
How did you get here? Did Hyatt help you? Or
no,
any of those organizations?
No, no. This was...
Why did you come? Let me ask you that. Why did the family come?
It was a lucky break. But I don't know whether that story will be interesting. Because in Europe, the laws are if you have a house, the son of the first marriage inherits that house. And my father, he married, and he had sisters, but see, he was not the oldest, but he was a son. He was supposed to. But my grandfather, before he died, he had one wish that his second wife and children should live in that house as long as they lived. Then this uncle and aunt, they wanted to come to America. And they couldn't sell this house unless... They couldn't sell it. Nobody would buy it. Because even if my father said, yes, it's against the law, that's all. You can't, it was his house.
Against which law? The Jewish
law
or
no.
The law of the state?
The law of the state.
Okay.
The son of the first marriage. And so they brought him with him. My uncle brought my father with him, left his wife then to sell the house.
How you came.
That's all.
So you didn't come because of the discrimination or because there was...
I don't think we would have otherwise gotten here because the Jewish people in Romania lived very well.
Mm-hmm.
There was no poverty to the extent that you've seen it anywhere else. But there was food was plentiful. And I remember a couple of women coming every Thursday to our house, and my mother would give them a chicken and a dozen eggs and some beans and some... And this was a gift for the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was a generous gift in any language.
Mm-hmm.
But it was there. It wasn't that they were rich. It was just that food was plentiful, that nobody had to go without it.
Can you say your parents were religious?
Yes, very religious, and they had to go to synagogue in town, too. And I always went with them because you had to carry the prayer books. And my mother and father never said, you mustn't do that. You mustn't. For instance, when it comes to Passover, and they clean out the chometz,
mm-hmm.
you have to take out the ink out of the house even. You know, there's not anything that is in connection with daily living year-round that's left around. Mm-hmm. Not only bread. They change dishes, mm-hmm. you know, and I went to school. The school went 6 days there, and I went to school on Saturday, Sabbath. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go. I didn't want to miss it. And my father and mother never said you can't go. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
We lived it. Yeah. I talked to all of them about this too. And I said, we lived religion, and if I didn't pick it up, it's not because I didn't see it. I was just against it all the time. And I used to give my mother arguments, and I don't think I'd like that in print, what I why?
But how much formal education did you have?
That's all. High school, then 4 years of grade school. Mm-hmm.
And then how old were you when you came here?
13 and a half.
And you didn't go to school here?
Oh, no, I went to work, and I made more money than my husband when we got married. I was lucky enough because I am not very good with my hands. I have very poor coordination. So I couldn't go any place where they sell people that...
Yeah, they
did that. They did that and made clothes and so on. And I had this sister of mine that didn't know how to sew and always made her own clothes. She could make $6 a week. And I didn't know how to sew, and I wasn't good at it at all. And you had to learn to sew, and it was just as important in school as arithmetic. But I was very clumsy. I never finished anything. And so I made $15 a week to begin with, and then later made $25.
Doing what?
Working at men's neckwear.
Oh, in sales?
No. Making.
Oh, I thought you couldn't sew.
No, they're made by machine.
By machine.
And then you turn them over and press them.
Oh,
I didn't need to know.
You didn't have to hand sew.
See?
But you could work the machine.
The machine, if I could work the machine, I would have made $50 a week.
Oh.
I was too clumsy. I just finished them. Finish them.
In the meantime, what were your parents doing here? How did they earn?
My mother died before she came here. They left four children, very young. They came to America, went to school. Very unfortunate reason for that. But it was quite a struggle to keep house. We used to cook our dinner from one night to the other. But, you know, it wasn't hard. It wasn't an imposition. It was just something we wanted to do to help out the others. Every time I bought something for myself, I bought something for the other children, too. They just felt that they missed an awful lot when they didn't have a mother.
Well, did you all live together here
yes.
when you came here?
Oh, yes, till we got married.
And none of you was really the mother substitute? I mean, was your older sister, or were you?
No, I don't think, I don't think you could do that. One time I wrote a letter to my, we're all grown up already, and the children ourselves, I would write to Leah and say, sign mother, and I wrote to this younger sister of mine, her sign mother, and I couldn't imagine, she hadn't written to me for a long time. And then my Leah was going to New York, I find out from Angola. She says, I signed my name mother. Mm-hmm. See, that's, it bothered her, uh-huh. even though she didn't remember even my mother.
But this was your sister that
you had done? Yes.
Okay, so what did your father do when he came here?
He opened up a grocery store and he wasn't very good at making a living after that. He wasn't at home. He had a beautiful voice and he was very educated, so was my mother, and both in Jewish and Romanian, because there's so many women that came that didn't know. When she'd go to the synagogue, a lot of women would stand around and listen to her, you know. So he went to Canada because we had relations in Canada. And he was singing to the, in the, for the holidays.
He was a cantor?
A cantor. And cantor and rabbi, because they had nothing else. It was out in the country in the sticks. And he got $200 for that. But he didn't want to stay. First of all, he didn't want to make a living out of his religion. And second of all, he said he had 5 daughters to marry off, and there was no chance of them marrying Jews out there.
So, well, had he gone there alone, or had he stayed himself?
Alone, yes.
And how long did he stay there in Canada?
About a year.
This was after you were settled in New York, or
yes.
Before?
No, after we were settled. But it was before my other sisters and brother came. It all happened, I guess, soon after that he went, because my mother had a sister and a brother in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And they had sons that were in business in Ottawa. At that time, it was very primitive up there. It's beautifully built up now.
Yeah. Okay. Then how did you learn English when you came here?
I was telling this to a friend of mine last night, that the Romanian language is so much like English that it isn't hard if you devote yourself to that. I went to lectures. There was always a free lecture in Cooper Union. You know, Cooper Union is a free college, city college. They just began to charge a lot of East Side boys, and they had to be the brightest, became professionals there. But they always had free lectures, and I used to go to the lectures, and I used to go. There were churches that had lectures, free churches. Philosophy, I'm philosophy. And, you know, all you had to do was imitate them, because I knew what they were talking about. Like we say, in Romanian, say impossible instead of impossible, or terrible instead of terrible. And they talked about dormitories. Well, there's no other word for dorm than sleep, than dorm. I forgot a lot of it now, but I know that that was not hard for me. I am sure the Romanian language, every letter is sound, and that's the only, I'm not good at spelling it at all.
And how did you learn to write it? Was that no problem?
The writing is the same.
I mean English.
I hit or miss. If I have to spell it myself, I can't even remember how it has to be spelled.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you the truth. If I guess right, it's all right. But you will not mislead it, because...
because it's the way it sounds.
Yeah.
You write phonetically. Okay. So, all right, we know about your work. What about your friends? What did you do? Let's get to Pittsburgh. What did you do after you got to Pittsburgh here? And who all came with you here?
Well, I was married and had...
Oh, you were married before you came to
Pittsburgh? Oh, sure, my 2 first children.
All right, then let's go back to
you talk about socialists. I don't know whether... I belong to the Socialist Party in New York.
You were the socialist, maybe, she meant.
No, my husband was too. I met him in the socialist.
Oh, all right.
And I don't know whether it'll be interesting to anybody, But I worked with girls, and my sisters, and I'd love to join a club that will read books and discuss them and have some interest in them. And she says, why don't you join the Socialist Party? And I thought it was an educational organization. But when I got into it, I discovered that if you didn't read, you better stay away, because they were very well versed in all the latest books and everything that was written and said about the most important things in life. Mm-hmm. So you kept, you had to keep abreast. Mm-hmm. And I went to classes to discuss socialism, real socialism, and we'd read and discuss it, and it's like the Talmud, you do classes. Mm-hmm. That's the way it works.
You know? Really analyze.
That's right. And you got a feeling for what you're doing.
And you embraced it then.
I felt at home, mm-hmm. because it was something I felt. I don't know how to say it.
It agreed with the way you felt.
That's right, because at that point there were a lot of anarchists around. Now the anarchists have a beautiful philosophy of life. You don't need no policemen, you don't need no...
I think that man is inherently good.
Good, and they will do good and all that. And I wished it was so. And they didn't believe in marriage, because why should anybody hold you together rather than each other?
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sounds like today.
Yes. But, see, at that time they wrote books about the children of this offspring that were cursing their parents because they didn't feel at home in the society we live in. And this is another thing you have to take in consideration. But today, I don't know where it's leading.
But how different do you think it is today?
I mean, it's more acceptable.
That's right. But it's the same old idea that you grew up with.
But it's not for a reason. It's only personal. It's not philosophical. It's not something they thought through. They went to their feelings. They're not a disciplined people. You'll pardon me for saying that. And that discipline has to come from the home. You know, some discipline. If you teach children discipline, then they have to discipline themselves. You know something, going back to my mother. When she said goodbye to us, I was 13, my sister was 17. She says, you know, children, if I was with you 24 hours a day, and if you didn't want to be good, I couldn't stop you.
It has to be inside you, is what she was telling me.
You'd have to want to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so true, as older I get, you can't watch anybody. And if you have to, it's...
All right, so you joined the Socialist Party, and then that's where your friends were, and that's...
Yes, and they still are.
Uh-huh.
I don't go so often, but I have more friends in New York than mm-hmm. I think I have here, although I shouldn't say that, because through my children I have, and I've been here since 1916.
Mm-hmm. And how did you keep up with your friends in New York?
We never gave up, you know, when you get together. We're not old, we're young.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
It's a funny thing.
Uh-huh. Well, did you go back and forth?
They have organized this. There was a great need for the socialist movement at one time. When the people came over with great skills, they worked 12, 14 hours a day, and they'd bring bundles home. And these socialists helped to organize them. They were on the picket lines. The others were afraid of their jobs even.
But did they help get the labor union started?
They did. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It so happened that the first organizers of I shouldn't say it all over, because Eugene Victor Debs organized the Pullman trains.
I don't know what you're
going
to do to the sound, but I'm going to back you up. Pardon me.
That's all
right.
Pardon me. And the great, men's clothing organization started in Chicago. But I could only talk about New York. And in 1911, they had the Triangle Fire, where there was a factory of ladies' underwear, and they had all doors locked, and hundreds of girls jumped the window. The fire broke out, and they made a hole in the sidewalk all around it, and the whole city became black. It was such a fire in New York City, the big place, okay? It was done, I believe it was on 11th Street or 12th Street. Everybody ran. And this socialist work lecture the socialists are not revolutionists, they're evolutionists. They try to educate them, the need for it, the talk about it.
Mm-hmm. In the shop.
Yeah, they have to do it themselves. They have to want to do it.
And what part did you play in all this? I mean, were you an actor?
A very little part. In the Necklace Makers Union, I became I'm not a speaker. I never was. And years ago, I was not so very good at speaking, neither. Glad that I have not gotten the accent that others have.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest sister is a wonderful speller, and she knows German and French and Jewish, and she could write it today. But you think she just came off the boat when it comes to talking.
Mm-hmm.
But she always lived among the Jewish people that taught Jewish,
right.
Even though her children didn't. Anyway, I became a shop chair lady, they call it. And it was funny, there was a socialist paper that I always carried to work, where I read with lunch hour. And after I got married a while and I met some of the girls, they were walking with this New York car like they wanted me to see. I didn't do a thing other than just do what I have to do.
That's the example.
Mm-hmm. And then I meet them now. They call themselves the old timers. So these old timers take care of the people that were in the labor movement, and they haven't got a cent of their name. They never did. They wrote books. But there was no money, and so they helped them out.
Mm-hmm.
They call themselves the old timers. And every month, once a month, during the 6 months of the year, they honor one great outstanding man that is still living, a lawyer or a doctor or that was part of our group. And there were Hemingwayites too, that helped. You know, there was a strike, there was a Jewish judge, a couple of years ago, I went to this kind of a judge honor they gave. He just let them go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were arrested, you know, to have the nerve to get organized.
Mm-hmm. So they did lots of good.
But they always saw the wrong, let's say. So when I first became aware of this organization, and I just wondered, I couldn't understand why anybody would always look for the wrong.
Mm-hmm. So they could write it, huh?
But see, we would not have made any progress at all. Even today, I think about the Russian Jews. They're letting them out of thousands a week because they really want to overload Israel. And yet you still have meetings. I wish they'd stop them. Meetings in the country about Russian Jews. I think it was wonderful to call attention to the world. But don't you think there should be a slowing up of when things are going your way?
I don't know. I don't know how badly these people want to come out or what they're doing to them in Russia.
You can be sure that they want to come out. And this is the most surprising thing that happened, is that that they have remained Jews for so long.
That's right.
See, that's another lesson we have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Why? It's over 50 years. 1917 was the year, that was the same year that my son William was born.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget the revolution and my son William there. At that time, we thought it was going to be a social revolution, not a communist revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's an awful lot of things to write there. But they even took away the bread from the farmers. He can't keep an extra bushel of wheat for himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I bet none of them benefited.
What do you think should be, you think we should ignore it or just soft pedal this Soviet?
No, for the time being. They certainly don't mean well. They have increased the numbers, and Israel is not crying about it, you know, but it stands to reason that they've got so much trouble now that
they don't need this extra money.
It's just a little slow, but you can't say it. And you know, Mr. Mayor is not religious.
Most of the Israelis aren't religious.
Some are very. Most Jews always prayed to die in Israel. To die in Israel.
Mm-hmm. Not to live.
See, to die in Israel. That was their wish. Now, she was ambassador to Russia. And she had to go to the synagogue in Russia, Shona Yom Kippur. And when she went out of the synagogue, they all followed her. And she stuck her head out and she said, "Thank you for remaining Jews."
Mm-hmm.
She's so brilliant. We can be so proud of her.
Yes.
And so modest and humble.
Mm-hmm. All right, I still haven't found out how you met your husband, other than in the party. You didn't tell me about him.
That's right. I don't know.
How long did you go with him before you?
For a year and a half. He wanted.
I don't even know his name.
Sidney Stomach. Sidney Stomach.
Okay.
He was ready to marry me right away, and I wasn't sure that. I think, suppose today, this marriage would have never lasted because he was always at meetings,
mm-hmm.
always. And I had children 3 and 3 years. I was a little bit tied down, and I gave up a lot of activity, but you couldn't get any sympathy because everybody else needed it more than I did.
And what? Was he in the profession or business?
He was in business. We had a, the last thing we had was a work clothes service.
The laundry service?
It's not a
linen service.
It was work clothes service instead of
linens, yeah.
I cook the laundry too, because both, but we started as work clothes.
Well, what was he doing in New York when you first met him?
He was a shipping clerk. This is a funny thing that he was doing. At that point, the South was very far away. And they were shipping clothes. They would buy off the remnants of all the manufacturers, clothing industry, and ship them to the South. Now, when I'm thinking now, I don't know what they needed heavy coats and suits there, but they were sold, they are sold whether there. But this is what he would pack in big crates and ship them to different parts of the South.
Mm-hmm. You don't know what they did with them.
They sold them because they sell coats there.
Yeah. Did you say they were?
There was an industry though. You know, that today you know what happened is that the people that wanted to do away with the union opened up factories down the South. So they make their own clothes. And they make an awful lot of clothes in Miami Beach.
But they still have to pay union wages, don't they?
The union follows them, but they're much lower than
up north.
Oh, sure. This also, in 1912, there was a tremendous textile strike in New England states. That's where they made rugs and all kinds of textiles. And they were out for the longest time, months and months. And the New York workers took their children to keep for the duration of the strike. Now, where do you find such a kind? They were not rich people. We were all working people.
This was your group, you mean?
Not my group.
Well,
I'm big enough. Working people. I could say all the unions. All the unions. They lost, huh? They lost. Because you go through the South, you find all the textiles now out in the South. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we had a parade in New York City, and we were dressed as nurses to carry like it looked like a bed, you know. I don't know what you call
bed
it.
Bed rolls or something.
No, you know, two people would hold the front and...
Oh, a litter, very much for an ambulance.
Yeah.
An ambulance patient. A litter, isn't it?
Yeah. No. Anyway, it's like a bed. Anyway,
stretcher.
All right. That's my trouble,
mm-hmm.
Not the stretcher. And people threw down their watches into the... and their marriage rings. You know, you cannot say, I don't know whether you read that article in the Chronicle about this fellow that spoke here that was after the Nazis. He says it's wrong for us to say that only 6.5 million Jews died. We have to say 11 million people were dead. So the world does become involved. And it was so. He didn't like the Catholics any more than he liked the Jews. And I guess the same way as, you know, there were an awful lot of Irish and Italian on the East Side too. They spoke Jewish. And it was a fantastic thing, you know, when they talked about the East Side here. I know, I can't remember, Henry Street Settlement.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Henry Street Settlement wanted my youngest sister to go to college. they would pay her $1.50 a week expenses.
Where did they get the money?
And they couldn't. Oh, there was trade union, women's trade union league. There was a women's trade union league, and the richest women were there.
They funded it.
I suppose. I know the poor. And the theater guild started on the east side. The actors and actresses wanted these poor people to see good plays. Nothing became of it. There was so much good there that I can't. And when I think of how many people are suffering on the hill, they don't come.
A few drops trickled in. The city does a little bit. Mm-hmm. All right. So you came here, and why did you come to Braddock?
My husband got a job to manage a credit store, and he sold me a bill of goods. I had family there. He says, you know, as long as we live in New York and we have a lot of friends, we'll never come to anything. By the time my husband got here on Memorial Day, and I came here 4th of July, and he was already a member of the, you know, we had a Y there, YMHA, mm-hmm. and of course the Socialist Party was always there, and he, the B'nai B'rith, mm-hmm. he was just a social being. Mm-hmm. He just had to join up, and so the same story started all over again, and
did we have an active, we must have had an active Socialist Party here.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Don't ever forget that there was a great Kate Richard O'Hare. And I can't even remember why she went to jail, but it was for some organization that she went to jail. And they had a meeting after she came out of jail. Meeting in the Labor Lyceum on the hill to raise money, and they raised $800. That place was chock full those days. And I had reason, because our plant wasn't far from there. I just don't know how people ever got up there. The hill was so steep. We had to go by streetcar. We had to get off Fifth Avenue. There was no transportation up the hill.
Mm-hmm. But everybody made it.
Everybody came there. It was the communists that ruined our movement, our Socialist Party. They came in and...
what year was that?
1919.
The communists.
That, right. See, they started to gribble as soon as they had success in Russia. Lenin was a communist that nobody wanted. He was in this country, he was in France, and then, you know what, the Germans put him in a train, sealed the car. They put him back to Russia because the Germans thought that he can give them trouble if he was in Russia. That's what happened in 1917, during the First World War. That's how Lenin got back to Russia. Anyway, going back to the hill, I don't know now what I was trying to bring out.
The communist room, the social.
Oh, yes. We used to have meetings up there at the Labor Lyceum. And when we had an election,